Recruiting is something that all music teachers have to think about at various points throughout the year. While recruiting may feel like an arduous task, today's guest shares some strategies that get students involved for greater success.
Welcome to Pass the Baton, Empowering Students in Music Education. Here, we amplify the voices of music teachers around the world who are passing the baton and creating environments where the music students are empowered. Together, we can help students transform from passive consumers to vibrant creatives. Welcome back to the Pass the Baton podcast. I'm Catherine Finch.
And I'm Teresa Hoover. We're so glad that you're here today. So, Catherine, how have you been? It's been a couple of weeks since we've recorded an interview.
Yeah, it's been a little while. I just got back from the Illinois Music Ed Conference in Peoria. And it was
My goodness.
Yeah, we had a really great time. It's so nice to see. It's so nice to connect with other music teachers and like meet new people too after sessions and things. So I have to share, we got a little Pass the Baton love, which was amazing and awesome.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah, it's nice to hear. And but yeah, and also just to connect with some new people who maybe will be on podcasts in the future. And just like you get so much good information. And Teresa, I don't know if I said this to you earlier. I really got a message from many of the sessions that I went to. Now, I sought out specific ones, but a lot of people talking about student ownership and student voice and student choice. And, you know, it was really amazing to hear. And in fact, one, a professor said during one of them, like, guys, we got to get off the podium and step to the side and get out of the main focus and let our kids, you know, get in there. And it was like, oh my goodness, it was so good to hear.
That's so encouraging. See, if I think back, you know, 10, 15 years ago going to conferences, I mean, and I loved it, right? I loved everything that I was hearing and learning, and I felt like I was getting so much out of it. But it's nice to see that the message is shifting slightly. We're not saying that good musicianship isn't important. We're not saying that technique, like we're not, you know, that stuff is still important. But I think people are starting to see that we need to also really be thinking about the students.
Yeah.
And that's what you're saying. Yeah. Oh, that's so exciting. So the Arizona conference is coming up this weekend. So
nice. Well, you're going to have to share everything.
Oh yeah.
Let me know how it goes.
Of course I will.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, so before we get to today's guest, which actually I remember I got to see our today's guest speak at several years ago at a conference. That's where I first was introduced to her. So there you go. The power of going to these state conferences. Before we get to today's interview, we want to just kind of make a reminder that you can find the show notes in the podcast player. They're also right below the video in YouTube. So be sure to check that out. All the links that we talk about, just anything that's relevant to this episode and just the podcast in general, you can find there in the show notes.
Yeah. And if you like today's interview, please consider showing Pass the Baton some love. I tried to say that at the conference too, like, oh my goodness, thank you so much. If you want to consider a review, that would be so helpful because that is another way. I mean, it's so nice to hear in person for sure, but it's another way to really kind of get the message out to other people. So yes, if you want to, you know, write a review or anything like that, that would be super helpful.
Absolutely. Because we live in a world of algorithms these days, right? And that's kind of how they work. So reviews help, you know, more people know about the podcast, hear about it, and really just get to hear the wonderful messages that all of our guests have to share. So that's helpful. Another way to help, if you're feeling in the helpful mood, you can check out the Buy Me a Coffee site, also linked in the show notes. What's it say? Less than the cost of a cup of coffee, you can send some support. Just helps with things like hosting fees, mailing lists, all the good stuff that goes on behind the scenes. So, all right, today's guest, are we ready to hear all about recruitment and retention?
We are. Let's go.
Okay. Well, welcome back. We are so excited to be here. And we are joined today by our guest, Angela Ammerman. Angela, hello.
Hello.
So good to see you.
So good to see you both. I'm so excited to see you and to be here.
I know. And I think if I'm right, Catherine, is Angela our first repeat guest on the podcast?
I think so.
Oh my gosh, I feel so honored, you all. Like the little heart emoji is just emanating out from here. So for those of you that can't see, all the hearts.
Love it.
It's been a little while since we've had you on. So would you be able to introduce yourself a little bit and tell us about what's going on now? A lot more things are going on now than back then.
Absolutely. So I now have a 3-year-old son who I'm completely obsessed with, as is anyone that has a little one around. And, you know, my work schedule kind of revolves around him. So Monday through Thursday, I get to stay at home with him. And then Friday is madness because on Friday, I teach all my classes at George Mason University when I'm in town. And if I'm not, then I'm guest conducting somewhere or presenting at a conference, or doing any number of different things. So I was just recently conducting Utah Allstate, their middle school or their junior high group. And it was such a cool event and reminded me of how important these events are in children's lives. And so I was really grateful to get to do that. And then the weekend before that, I think was Florida Music Educators Association. And there I was presenting with some incredible colleagues who wrote chapters in my book, The Music Teacher's Guide to Recruitment and Retention. And so that book is out now and I'm so excited about that book. And other than that, I'm working on 2 books now for the Music Teacher's Guide series, which is super exciting. And I'm working on a piece of music, you guys, called Conductivores, where the students are so obnoxious. And I'm going to say it here that I will have this piece done by the end of the school year because now I will have to actually get the piece done. But it's so cool and so annoying. And string teachers everywhere, beware. I will have it done by the end of the year. Who knows if anybody will actually publish it. But Conductivores, super exciting.
Oh, that all sounds like so much fun. And what great stuff you get to do. And for those watching, sorry about the large dog on my lap. This is just kind of what happens here. Sometimes he joins me for a podcast episode. Why not? Okay. So you briefly hinted at this book, when we had you on last time, I think it was episode 24, and you were talking about the English language learners, because you had recently put out a book about that, which was just such a fantastic resource. But now we have moved on, recruiting and retention. So what inspired this topic? Why is this the direction you went next?
Oh my gosh, you all. Well, I love recruitment and retention. Number one, because I know how crucial music has been in my life and how when someone recruited me into their program, it changed the entire trajectory of my life for the better, without a doubt. And so I believe so strongly that we are to recruit every kid. Now, that doesn't mean every kid should be in your ensemble necessarily, but I do believe that we should all be recruiting every kid into a musical ensemble or a music program of some kind, because we know the benefits of music. So, that was a big part of it. But then when COVID hit, one of my colleagues, who is a fantastic band director, he came to me and was like, I just feel like somebody took a wrecking ball and just crashed it through my whole entire program. It decimated my program. And he was such a good teacher. Like, I've seen his work firsthand. And he ended up getting de-staffed from his school because his numbers weren't high enough. So in spite of all the great work he had done, he was now split between 2 schools. And once you're split between multiple schools, it's so much harder to rebuild because you don't have the resources, you don't have the time, you don't have the stability, and then it just gets harder and harder. So after talking with him and just sharing a few of my ideas, I was like, okay, I've got to write this book. Like, I have to get as many resources together because I don't have all the answers. I have some answers that have worked really, really well for me. And I've been so grateful that I've been able to build up programs everywhere I've gone. They've just kind of blown up, which has been really exciting. But, my experiences they actually are limited. I primarily have done orchestra and teaching college. And, so I haven't recruited for band. I haven't recruited for choir. I haven't recruited for music technology or mariachi. So I went around and tried to find the best recruiters in our field, recruiting all the way from kindergarten to these little orph ensembles, all the way to recruiting octogenarians 4 New Horizons programs. So this recruitment book really covers all of it. And it's been such an honor to work with these contributors who have written chapters in their area of expertise and to get to share that with the world with the hope that more and more kids will be involved in music for longer, not just until 12th grade, but actually, you know, through college and beyond. That's really my vision with the book, is that we get as many people into music, staying in music for as long as possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've all heard it now. Recruiting is not just for the high school people.
Oh my gosh, this is for everyone. Yes, that's exactly right.
Well, I guess when you're talking about your book about recruitment, I'm guessing that students are involved in some way in the recruitment process. Knowing you, I'm guessing there is. So I guess my question is, what are student-centered ways that the kids are involved in this?
Oh my gosh, if you can involve your students, your program will just explode. Because the thing is that the kids that are coming to your program, they actually don't care what you have to say about your own program as much. It's kind of like the guy who created the, I don't know, like this speaker here, the guy who created the speaker. I don't care what he has to say about the speaker because clearly he loves it. He made it. I want to know, people who are using the speaker, what were their experiences like? They're the ones who will sell me the speaker, not the guy that created it. And with your music programs, you are not the best person to speak on your music program, believe it or not. It's actually your students and your parents. So one of the most enjoyable things that I would always do is to put on a recruitment concert. You know, lots of people put on these recruitment concerts, but what I see most teachers do is that they talk through the recruitment concert. And you are not cool. I'm sorry. Like, you're cool to me. I think you all are like super cool, but to those middle school kids in the audience, you should get a high school kid instead. And when you get your high school kid up there speaking about how cool your program is, that's when the numbers start rolling in. So the first thing I'd recommend that you do is plan a recruitment concert where you have your students with speaking parts. I had a whole entire script for my students. They helped create the script. So each year it changed because they would say ridiculous things. Like, I'll never forget this one cellist was like, all the girls like the cellist. And then this violinist was like, the girls like the violinist. And these two guys were like arguing on stage at our recruitment concert about who gets more girls. And it was super inappropriate. And I was like, I don't even know if this is okay. But I'll tell you what, we had almost every single kid joining one of our ensembles. So we were like, yeah. And after that recruitment concert, actually, which I could speak to a little bit more, but that recruitment concert, which was planned by my students under my guidance, we were leaving the middle school and this one kid behind us was like, orchestra's my sexy bae. And I was like, what? I didn't even know, you guys. I was like, should I be mortified? Should I be really proud? Like, this is the coolest moment ever. And my students were like, oh, we got game. Let's go. And if they were students, like now in 2024, they would totally be like, we are the Riz Orchestra. And so it was just hilarious. It was such a cool moment. And I realized that we were doing something really special by getting the kids to plan the concert, by giving them all of the speaking roles. And what they would do is like, they actually took Mozart 25 and we played it on our traditional instruments. And my students suggested that we go ahead and turn it into a mashup, and it was a rock Mozart. So we actually eventually brought in drum set. And then out of nowhere, one of my students comes out with an electric violin playing Mozart 25. And it was so cool, you all. Like, just, you know, you don't expect a string orchestra to do that. And the surprise element was really cool too. But that was, you know, all of this is me listening to my students. And so the more that we can involve our students in this, the more student-centered all of our recruitment is, the better it is, because A, they're closer in age to the kids that you want to recruit. When we're talking about like recruiting middle schoolers into your program or recruiting high schoolers or even recruiting elementary kids, they know what the kids are into better than we do. They just do. But B, they're so cool. Like my kids, they actually would get asked for autographs. They would talk about, they would be in the grocery store and randomly some elementary kid would come up to them and just stare at them. And they're like, do I know you? And the kid would be like, can I have your autograph? Are you that violinist? And so they would give autographs. It was so cute. And all of that comes from you know, the students planning things and kind of taking on a more active role. The other thing that I really recommend everyone do is to create recruitment and retention challenges in your program. So, you know, you can actually have the number that you currently are for enrollment, whatever that number is, let's just say it's 110. And to be full-time at one school, I know for me, I had to be 150. So I was always like, I'm going to get to 150. We are going to get to 150, because once you're full-time at one school, oh my gosh, like all the doors open up to you. It's golden. So we were going to get to 150. So for me, that would be my recruitment challenge. And each section, my first violins, second violins, violas, cellos, and basses, I would have a specific recruitment goal for them. Can you recruit this many kids into the program? Whether they are middle school kids or whether they're your friend from, you know, science class, can you bring these kids into the program? And that was just huge. They loved the recruitment and retention challenges. And then also, of course, can we keep everybody? And I will tell you, 100% retention is possible. It is absolutely possible.
That just sounds like so much fun. And what I love is that you're talking about how, you know, you're putting on this concert, you're talking, you're playing all of these things, right? But the students are helping with it. It's not like it's that much more work for you. I mean, yes, I'm sure it is work, right? I'm sure there are things that you have to do, but you're putting a lot of the heavy lift on the students. And that's great.
Oh my gosh. And that's what I love about your book, by the way. We talked about this last time, and I've talked about this to so many people after your book came out, that you talked about, like, it is a little heavy lifting at first, right? Like, to empower your students, it does take a little more at first. But then, you know, everything shifts to where it's like a well-oiled machine, and these kids, they do amazing work. And the more that we train them to do that work, the better and better that it gets. We are all better together. So I absolutely have loved that about the message that you all are sharing too, is that, yeah, it might feel like it takes more time at first, but it is usually so much better. And then in the end, we save time ourselves. You know?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. This winter, my daughter got an invite for choir from like a letter. And I didn't even, but I'm wondering if that's what this was. I didn't even think about it, but one of her friends wrote her and said, "Hey, I think you'd be really great to be in choir. Would you consider joining us?" You know? And I'm like, "Oh, wow." Writing letters to your classmates is either age, she chose not to, but it was like a nice compliment. But like, I'm seeing now as a recruitment idea, right? That you could just simply write letters to friends.
Absolutely. And we haven't done it where they write letters to friends, but that's brilliant. So I'm definitely going to recommend that one. I love that. Yeah. But we have had them write letters to elementary kids. And so they're super short. And the only thing is, you know this already, all the teachers know this, but make sure you read them before you send them off. I mean, they're probably all good, but just want to double check, because I remember I had one of the kids that was such a great kid and loved orchestra. But I think his letter said something like, "Dear kid, you should join this class. Thanks, Brandon." So, I mean, it was kind of cool for the right kid that would totally make them join, to be honest. But just read them. You never know what they might be.
Yeah.
That's such a good idea. Yeah. And I remember, one of the things that we would do in one of my old schools is we would also have the older kids, we would use Flipgrid to make like little video things, but those weren't personalized. I kind of like the personalized idea. So it goes directly to a student, whether it's somebody you know or don't know. I don't know. It just makes you feel special.
It does. It really does. And I know one teacher who's done like pen pal things that, you know, that really boosts literacy, especially in our, because I'm so interested in English language learners, you know, they would write letters to some of the English language kids at the elementary school. And so they had little pen pals, which was just really, really cool. And it was that personalized touch. And you could totally use Flipgrid to, you know, do a personalized invitation video. That would be so special. And really unique. I love that idea too.
Yeah, that's really cool. And you know, you were talking, Angela, about how it starts off kind of that heavy lift and then it gets easier and easier. And I also think that what I've noticed with other things, maybe it's the same with recruitment, as soon as the students felt like their opinions and that their thoughts were, you know, valued, they would start suggesting things, things that I hadn't even thought of. And I wonder if that would be the same with recruitment. You know, if your idea is write a letter, well, maybe there's a, sorry to say it, maybe there's a more cool thing to do.
Oh, for sure. No, I mean, you know, my students, they would make suggestions that were so fantastic and so outlandish. And sometimes, I mean, I have to say, the more outlandish they were, the better they were sometimes. And I am one of those people that I do love really ridiculous things. And I remember one year, this was like my second year of teaching. I was teaching in North Carolina, and all my cellos, they were all boys that year, and they were growing out their hair. And by the time of our recruitment concert, they had shaved them into like mohawks. They legit had shaved their heads. So they just have that, like, you know, for the recruitment concert. And then they were like, we're going to put war paint on. And they did it. And oh my gosh, it was hugely successful. And the next year, my program doubled, you all. Like, my program legit doubled. And those kids, but they were so excited to go share how much they loved orchestra with the middle school kids. And so that was all their idea. And I was really uncomfortable with it, to be honest with you. I was like, I don't even know if I should go with this. Like, am I going to get in trouble? Is this like insensitive? Is this like rude? Is this, what is this? And I did allow them to, and oh, it was just like a rock concert like you've never seen. So that was really interesting. And you know, when I have let students kind of take the lead, it has been pretty impressive a lot of the time.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying too. Like it's like we say in our book too, and talk to other people, like there's this control, there's this level of control, right? What am I going to be okay with letting them take over? And, you know, where is the line and those kinds of things? It never gets better, right? Like, it's always a balance of like, what do I think I want to do and try? But that's just, I guess, part of teaching too is, yeah.
I think so too. And I think a lot of times, like, especially with young teachers, and I was very much this way too, we feel like we have to maintain such a tight level of control, partially because of classroom management, partially because of our reputation, partially because a principal might come in to observe us at any point. I mean, there's a lot of fear, I think, when you first start teaching around letting go a little bit. And I do think it takes great confidence, actually, not a little, it takes a lot of confidence to kind of start to give that up. And one of the big things I work with my students a lot of the time, who are future teachers, is getting off of the podium. But they're like afraid to get off of the podium. And I always say, the thing is, you have no idea what's happening in the back of the room. You think you have full control standing up there in front of the class, but that is a complete illusion. Get to the back of your group and just wait to see what's happening back there. Because if you never get off of that podium, you have no clue what's going on back there. And sure enough, you know, every time they go in the back, they're like, okay, I need to do this more often. And they really do, you know, but giving up that control is very scary. But I will also say, you know, because I go observe so many teachers, I love to watch teachers. The teachers who kind of, you know, who really do empower their students more, they do tend to have larger programs. They just do. They tend to have more success with recruitment and retention. And I think a big part of it is that the students know that they are in the curriculum. It is truly student-centered. It is also student-created in part, right? So, you know, these programs where we really let the students participate more, those are some of our best programs.
Yeah, I think it's not a coincidence. I think you're right, because when students can see themselves as an important, valuable part, that's someplace they want to be.
I always tell my students, like, don't tell them that they matter. Let them know and let them see that without a doubt, they matter so much that the curriculum would never be the same without them, that your content would never be the same without them, that they see themselves in the things that you do for the whole entire year, not just like once throughout the year, but all year long, that they are an active creator of the content in your program.
Yeah. And I think when you involve them in that recruiting process, you're showing that it's not, you know, it's not my band program, it's not my orchestra program, it's ours. you know, I'm not saying you go do my work and recruit. No, you're saying, let's make our program even better. Let's encourage more students to be a part of it. And that's such a powerful message.
Oh my gosh, it's huge. Well, and the students, you know, the more invested they are, the more likely they are to continue too. Not just like in your program while you're there, but like if you leave, you want your kids to keep going, or when they leave you, because I'm sorry, they're all going to leave us. That's the hardest part about being here. I feel like, but they leave us. But when they do leave you, you want all of that to continue on, and you want them to continue to share their gifts with the world as they continue to grow and as they go to college and beyond. And the more that they've invested in your program, the more that they see that they're part of it, the more they are going to continue.
I'm kind of curious, because you talked about how, you know, you had different contributors for your book for all different levels, everything from kindergarten up to the, you know, the New Horizons band. What are some interesting things that you learned and that the book shares about those two extremes and recruitment?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, first of all, what I saw more than anything was similarities. Oh. And you know, you might think that recruiting for an elementary ORF ensemble would be totally different from recruiting for the octogenarian ensemble that I talked about. But actually, you know, there are a lot of similarities. And the biggest one I would say is that everybody wants to belong socially. They want to have a place where they belong. And in all of these chapters, one of the common threads was this idea that that they have friends in the group. Even in this New Horizons group, Betty Ann Gottlieb, she's the director of music education at CCM in Cincinnati, and a dear friend of mine, she really reinforces the importance of bringing food to rehearsal and having social gatherings, because it is the friendships that keep people in the group and that recruit new people. And one of the things she says that I find hilarious, I had to actually find this in the book to make sure I say it right, but one of her members actually reached out to her and said, "We don't make mistakes. We just make artistic interpretations." And I thought that was the cutest thing ever, that, you know, these, she could have like an 80-year-old musician in there making mistakes and, but viewing them totally different, in the same way that I would want I teach early childhood now. I want those early childhood kids, I want them to see that same thing, that like, well, a mistake could easily turn into something that everybody is wanting to do. So that's been really cool too, is to see kind of the similarities. I would say the big differences that I see are kind of the ways you reach your students, or your, you know, recruits. So like for a public school, high school, you kind of have a pool of kids to choose from usually, right? Like, you're recruiting from a certain amount of middle schools usually into your program, and that's it. Like, you can't recruit somebody from a different high school into your program. That's just not a thing. It's not going to fly. But for like, we have a chapter on collegiate studio. You could recruit anyone from anywhere at any time, at any age, right? To recruit into your college studio. Or the director of the Swanee Summer Music Festival. Same thing. He can recruit anyone of any age from anywhere. And so the recruitment, the methods, they are definitely different, because they have to be able to find their people. And it's a lot harder to find your people when you don't have your own pool to draw from. So colleges, certainly, I know for me, I'm constantly recruiting when I go do these all-state orchestras. I never once say, come study with me at Mason. I actually never say that, to be honest with you. But what I always say, and I mean 100% truly, is I would love to help you find the best place for you. And I think that when you're recruiting for college, for music ed majors, for performance majors, for camps, we know that students have a choice in where to go. And so it's so important that we find the right place for them. And Mason may not be the right place for a student. As much as I want to build my program, what's more important is that I have that kid in the right place, right? And so like, if Mason isn't going to be the right place, then I'm not going to keep him anyways. And same thing for like, you know, recruiting for summer music programs. And even actually, when we're recruiting K-12, like if orchestra is not the right place for a kid, I want them in an ensemble of some kind. So I'm going to help them find that place. So I think there are just a lot of different considerations in terms of how we talk to our students, and how we kind of handle that. One thing I really encouraged in the book is to steer clear of kind of that competition that happens. And I know you both have seen it. I'm sure you've seen it. Mm-hmm. That band orchestra fighting over kids, yes. Or band choir or choir orchestra or whatever the case may be, right? But we had one phrase that we would always say when we were recruiting, and it's, we just want you to be part of something. Please be part of something. And I believe that so strongly. I believe very firmly in my colleagues and the goodness that they bring to the table. So I never want to like compete with them, compete against them. I want to join with them in making our school a better place and our world a better place.
That's such an important distinction, because sometimes we, you know, again, we worry like, oh, but I need more kids in my program. No, we need more kids in music in general, whatever that looks like. You know, sometimes we'll hear that against maybe a music technology program or against guitar or, you know, against these things that are slightly different than the regular, the traditional band, chorus, orchestra. But the fact is, no, we want kids in music. That's the goal. And you know, just to kind of go back even a couple minutes prior, you were talking about people belonging, and God, that's such an important thing. And I think that's, again, it brings us back to that student-centered element of things, of like, when we have students who feel like they belong somewhere, they're going to be able to show that to other students who will also want that same sense.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And what, you know, one of the things I talk about all the time, I feel like people must be sick and tired of me hearing me say this, but our name is the most beautiful word in our language. Our name is so important. And you know, for these teachers that have like 600 kids, actually, I met a teacher who said she had over 800 kids, elementary teacher, because she sees so many kids in Metro Nashville. And she said, but she uses every single kid's name because she has a seating chart. And if you don't have a seating chart, if you are not using your kids' names, how in the world are they seen? How are they seen? And how can they get to the point where they belong if even the teacher doesn't even bother to learn their name? And I get it with like, you know, 800 kids, 700 kids, you're not going to memorize them. It'll take you all year to memorize them, right? But we must make an effort to use their names as often as we can so that they are seen and that they matter and they know that with us. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I guess it just keeps hitting home to me of that when you're recruiting and you're trying to find out, especially if you're in the education world where we have this one set of pool students that are moving up, why wouldn't you ask your own students for help? Because like you said, if you're using a seating chart to help memorize names, like why wouldn't you use the things that are embedded in your program, even for just that selfish purpose of they know what kids like, you know?
Oh, without a doubt. And they're so proud. Like when they realize that they have reached that enrollment goal, it is a huge deal. And the thing is like, okay, if you have a great program that kids love, they are naturally going to be singing the praises of the program all over the place. Like they're going to do that naturally, right? But, you know, if you make it a specific, an endeavor, right? Like if you purposely make it an initiative, that's what I'm looking for, an initiative that you are going to reach this goal and it is a group goal. It actually brings everybody closer together. And then the kids are more likely to kind of push forward in recruiting their friends, and then they're going to bring more people to music. And that's like, for me, that's always the end goal. Let's get more people. Yeah. Because we know that music makes our lives better, and we know that music saves lives. Like I can't tell you how many people have literally said to me, music has saved my life, like of all ages. Mm-hmm. And that comment, it just keeps coming back to me over and over again as I talk to more people about recruitment and retention, that like, yes, teachers save lives, and other kids are helping to save lives too by recruiting kids into the program. We know how powerful these programs are, and how like music for English language learners, for example, it's the one place where they can communicate without talking. It is such a great place for our students. And it's a place where they can make friends so easily. So I just, of course, I know I'm speaking to people who all love music already, but you know, when we bring our students on board with this recruitment task, it does take some of the weight off of our shoulders too. And it really helps build that community even more.
Yeah. You reminded me as you were talking. Several jobs ago, I was working in a private school, and I don't think I would call it a band room. We kind of had a band closet. And I used to tell the kids, I'm like, come on, if we kept more people in band, they'll have to give us a classroom. And that was like one of our recruitment tactics. It was like, if we get more people, we won't fit. And then they'll have to.
Actually, you know what, Teresa? That's hilarious. That because so my second year of teaching in North Carolina, we had a similar thing, but we had to share a classroom with the band. And we loved the band. There was nothing wrong with the band, except that they had all these trophies, you guys. There were trophies everywhere you looked. An orchestra, we didn't have a single trophy, which was really sad. And it was only my second year teaching. It was only my first year there. So like, I didn't have time to get them a trophy. You know, we actually ended up making a trophy, by the way, at the end of the school year. Anyways, so I was like, okay, you guys, we've got to build up this program. And Teresa, I used something similar so that we can have our own room and not have to share the room with the band with all their trophies, because I just didn't want to look at all the trophies. It was so unfair. And it was so cute. At the end of the school year, we built this massive fake trophy so that we could put it in there and have our own trophy. And our program, it doubled. I mean, within 1 or 2 years, it doubled, but they never gave us our own room. Sadly, we had to share with the band forever. And actually, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, like they didn't even give me the split I really needed, to be honest, but we worked it out.
Yeah.
So it was,
yeah. Sometimes it's just those silly little things, right? You know, you know that they're not going to actually build you a classroom as much as we want to, but just it gets the kids thinking and gets them excited and gets them, yeah, makes
oh,
them part
it
of
totally
it.
Does. I love that. Yeah.
Well, what would be something that listeners could try tomorrow? I'm sure my brain is already going back to like what my children's experiences have been in school, and like, I remember this happened. Like, that's a great, you know, way to recruit. But what would you tell somebody wanting to try something this spring?
Well, okay, you know, all of those t-shirts that you have laying in a deserted locker that you don't even know where the lock went to in the back. They're like 500 old t-shirts. They're probably all of the like random weird sizes that you ordered that nobody has and nobody uses. Those t-shirts, go give them out tomorrow. Give them to your PE teacher, give them to the favorite science teacher, give them to the coaches, give them to your guidance counselors, your principal, give them to all of the favorite teachers in the school, and then give them out to a few of your students. Maybe you can create your recruitment team, give them to your recruitment team and ask them to share them some t-shirts with some of their friends. And on one day, once a week, ask those people to wear the t-shirt, just one day a week. Say, can you wear, it's orchestra day, you know, or whatever, band day, you know, guitar day. And so they'll wear the t-shirt on that day. That is such an easy, simple recruitment task. And you can even ask them like, hey, listen, have you noticed that the orchestra kids are extra good on the volleyball team? Like they're always there. They're always on time. They're super on it. Volleyball coach, dear volleyball coach, who we love so dearly, will you wear this t-shirt and encourage your other volleyball kids to join orchestra so that you can have more players that show up on time and are respectful and are loved? And then you've recruited more people from across your school to help you recruit, and they are free advertising for you. Win, 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 win. And then you can get the kids to give them out to their friends too. And then their friends can have like matching orchestra t-shirts. And so then you can all, you know, you can all sport your cool orchestra fit every, you know, Wednesday or whatever day of the week that you choose to have it. And that's one of the really fun things you can do tomorrow. Literally just go grab those shirts and give them out, get rid of them, clear out that locker, put them to use. There are two other things too that I have written down actually that you can try tomorrow. And one of my favorite things is to ask your kids, who was your favorite teacher? Like, and take a poll and write down the favorite teachers and say, we're going to invite one teacher per concert to come do something fun. And so, you know, reach out to their favorite teachers and invite them to your next concert to do something ridiculous. They can conduct a piece where your students won't look up, not once at them. They can come attempt to play, you know, maracas or whatever. Just give them a really easy role. And because with that teacher comes their students. And if they're a favorite teacher, a gazillion students are going to want to come. And when that teacher comes and does the crazy thing, everybody's going to come. The newspaper, the local school newspaper, you could even probably get your local newspaper, depending on where you are. They'll come do a little story on you. You'll get on the school website, all of the cool things. And that's all advertising for your program. And that is so, like, the students will go crazy because they want to see their favorite teachers there. And then you're also going to text your feeder teachers and you're going to ask them to come do something at your program. Because when the middle school teacher comes to the high school or the elementary teacher comes to the middle school, they bring the students. And if they bring the students, guess who else has to come? The parents. And so then you've got a live audience from which to recruit and to share all of the amazing things about your program, and you're building those advocates right then and there. And I believe recruitment happens from the ground up. So if you're the high school teacher, you have got to be recruiting for elementary school. You're not just recruiting eighth graders into your program, never. Like, you are recruiting fourth graders into the string program. You're recruiting kids into the ORF program, hopefully, into the choir. You are an active participant in recruitment all the way up to where you are. And then the last thing, sorry, I could give you, I have so many
this
ideas.
This is great.
Thank you. Is, you know, those like little thermometer fundraiser posters that are, they're like really easy to make. And you're like, oh, we've gotten to $100. Now we're at $200. Let's make the thermometer burst. Well, okay. Put a big music note on a big poster board, like a, you know, an eighth note, and put little dashes where you are right now and fill it in where you are right now and have your goal enrollment at the top. And then at the top, maybe once the kids hit the goal enrollment for the year, maybe they get, I don't know, a pizza party or like a ridiculous TikTok video where you dye your hair hot pink or something. I don't know, whatever's going to work for you. But there is a prize once they reach the enrollment goal, and you're keeping track and you're in touch with your guidance counselors, hopefully regularly. But you can literally do this tomorrow. It's so easy. Draw an empty music note on a poster board and add some dashes with the numbers that you currently are sitting at and the number you want to get to. And that is such a great visual reminder for everyone to continue to recruit from your program. So those are just a few. I could go on about this for forever. I'm so sorry, but I love this stuff so much.
No, this is wonderful. And honestly, if they want to learn more, they really just need to read your book. But
read the book. It's so cute. And like, we actually have, we have chapters on everything. So like, no matter what you are teaching, we have it. We even have a chapter on music business because we know how important that is. And we believe that that is an up and coming field of study for our high school students in music. Yeah. And we're really excited to promote that as well.
That's great. Oh, there's so many good ideas. I love it.
Thank you.
Okay. So let's see. We've got a million ideas. We've got all the wheels are turning. We're thinking about how we can get students involved in the recruiting. We're going to be building up these programs. Yay, yay, yay. Let's shift gears for a moment. Okay. Here's something that we've been asking everybody, because while it's great that we're trying to make sure our students feel empowered, we've discovered that it's just equally as important that music teachers also feel some empowerment and can take ownership over, you know, their own learning and their own, you know, professional being. So with that in mind, how are you empowered as a music teacher?
So I'm so grateful in all of the different things that I'm doing right now that I'm given autonomy over almost everything. And I can speak to George Mason University in particular, because there is this trend in higher education where a professor gives a grade and then the administrator comes down and says, you can't give that grade. Now, this happens in public school too, right? Remember the, like, you can't give zeros, you can't give Fs. There's a certain amount of control that, you know, administrators sometimes have to exercise. It's part of their job. But, you know, I have so many colleagues in higher ed who are being told flat out, you cannot fail a student. And they'll say, the student has never showed up. This is a student who's going to become a music teacher. I cannot fail the student. And their administrator will say, you cannot fail that student. And I'm so grateful at George Mason. I've never once been told that I have to pass a student. And I know that sounds terrible. Like I feel part of me as a teacher feels guilty about this. But at the same time, I am both an empowerer of future educators and a teacher trainer, but I'm also a gatekeeper. And I take that role very seriously. The people that I train and I send out into the world to become music teachers, they're going to be working with all of these young children and molding their minds. So I take my role very seriously. And I'm so grateful to have that kind of autonomy to where I can give the grades I deem appropriate. And I have full support from my administration. And I think that those are two huge categories of empowerment, is that sense of autonomy and respect for the expertise of the educator. That I feel very grateful that all of the things I do, I feel that my administration is very, very respectful of my own area of expertise. And I so appreciate that. And not only that, but they're like supportive of some of my crazy ideas or like my plans. You know, as a mom, I've always wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. Like I just, that's for me and my family. I felt so strongly that was important. And very few institutions would allow a professor to just, you know, to kind of do that. But at George Mason University, they've given me a schedule where I can be at home with my son. And on Friday, I literally teach all of my classes on Friday. And that's just so rare to have that. And it is empowering, honestly, to know that someone supports you and values you enough to say, you know what, I trust that you will get what's done, what needs to get done on Fridays, and that this will work. And if it's not, that you'll, you know, schedule more like virtual meetings, which I do. And then the third piece is encouragement, you know, and I have got some just incredible colleagues who are so encouraging, and my administration is encouraging. And those are the things that empower me to do more. When they look at me and say, wow, you're doing a great job, thank you. Like that is empowering for me. It's just knowing that they value what I bring to the table. And yeah, I think those are the things that really empower me. Well, and then also being able to like empower my students too. There's like this whole kind of this trickle right approach.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, where empowerment leads to empowerment. Right.
Right. And as you were talking, I was thinking that, so I'm like, everything that she's saying that she feels as an educator, we've heard her at some point talk about in relationship to your students. And I bet that's not a coincidence.
Well, that's right. Yeah. I mean, because we see what a difference it makes when others do that for us, right? So it's natural to want to do that for others as well, hopefully. And hopefully our students see that too. And as they grow, they will take those same empowering strategies and that philosophy, just the philosophy that others can do something, that I don't have to do everything, that I am better with others. Like that's a philosophical belief that I hold so dear to myself, and not everybody feels that way. And you see that in their leadership style. So I hope that all of my students will take that approach as well and see how beneficial that is in their life, in whatever they end up doing, whether it's music or us.
Well, this has been wonderful. Thank you again, Angela, for being with us today. How can people connect with you? How can people get the book? Please share all those good things.
Yes, the book is available at giamusic.com, and you can get the Music Teacher's Guide to Recruitment and Retention, or you can get the English Language Learner one as well. They also, I believe, are both on Amazon. You can reach out to me on Instagram. I'm at Music Teacher's Guide, and I post ridiculous videos. So if you follow me, you know, follower beware. And then you can, of course, you can email me very easily at angela.ammerman@gmail.com, or go to my website, angelaammerman.com, where I try to put all the things together on that website. And I have tons of resources there. I have two resources in particular you all might be interested in. One is an actual poster you can just print that has a music note. It's like a poster template. It's like that idea of the fillable thermometer, but with a music note. And it has you know, dashes where you can actually go in through Canva and you can add your own numbers. You can add your own program name and you can just print that for free. Like you just go get that. And then I also have a growth implementation plan there that you can fill out with kind of some of the different recruitment and retention strategies you'd like to do over the year. There are different like sections for each month of the year. And then there's a projected enrollment at the bottom. And my recommendation with that is do fill it out and copy it and give it to all the people that have a say in what happens to you in your program. So I give it to boosters. I would give it to your administration. I would give it to your feeder programs. I would give it to, if you are a middle school, I would give it to the high school teacher as well, and get as many people involved in your own recruitment so that you have as many supporters knowing what's going on and hopefully funneling time, energy, money, students, whatever you need your way so that you can build that program up.
I love that. And as a follower of your Instagram, I can say two thumbs up. I love it.
Thank you. I so appreciate that you love the ridiculous. I'll keep going with it.
Good. Good. I would hope so. Well, you know, again, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. We really appreciate it. The ideas are wonderful. Your enthusiasm is always contagious and it's just, it's great. So we appreciate you and we appreciate all that you're doing.
Oh, thank you both. It was so great to see you and to get to chat with you all for just a little bit. I so appreciate you and just love the work that you all are doing. So thank you. And thanks to all the teachers listening, of course.
Yes, so thank you all. Absolutely. If you like today's episode, you will love the PassTheBatonBook.com website, where you can find free resources, coaching services, and how to support Pass the Baton. Speaking of support, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. Thanks again for listening.